The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We are back. The second hour is here. We're busy, busy first hour, and we are jam-packed the rest of the way with, of course, bottom of the hour, Mel Kiper, then 5 o'clock hour, Landon Dickerson and Mac Jones. Of course, yesterday, Herb Street and Dan Mullen. We are 2 weeks away from the draft. This weekend, the spring games start. And let's get back to the calls. And Keith is up next in Florida. Hello, Keith. Keith, are you there? No, Keith. How about Mr. Padge in Tuscaloosa? Hello, Mr. Padge.
Yes, Paul. I know you don't recognize my name like that because I decided everybody else has a name, so I'm going to use what I was at the old fraternity house. That's what they called me when I ran it. But I was the one that went through the same jobs as you did with radio, TV, and newspaper in Birmingham.
Oh, man.
And so, you know, we've worked together at the golf tournament in Channel 17. But that's not why I was calling. I was calling to in reference to the gentleman who was giving the thing about the tornado in Tuscaloosa, and I'm very familiar with that because I was working with Coach Saban, of course, from the very beginning, and I was one of the ones affected by my house being taken. I would have been much better off to stay at the Bryant Conference Center that day instead of go home, which you could see from my house. You could see the stadium. That's how close I lived. And Carson Tinker was my neighbor, who you know lost his girlfriend.
Sure.
It was pulled out of his arms. And so he lived at the end of my block. And all that was left of my house was the hallway where we all were standing and the little bit of carbon roof over my head. The roof was taken and the walls were gone. And when Coach Saban, you know, he was, what I did for Coach was when they were eat over at my place, I made sure everything was set up for him. And everything was just like he wanted it. And sometimes I would have recruiting things over there. So I told Cedric one time, which was, of course, you know who Cedric
sure.
is. I told him I wanted to talk to him because I wanted to thank him because when those guys went down to my street, Mark Ingram immediately recognized me, of course, because they all knew who I was. And those guys came out and helped me and I'm in a wheelchair. So they helped me get stuff that was left in that house, but there wasn't much. And I wanted to let him know they came back the next day. And I wanted him to know how much that meant to me. And I don't know whether he was more moved or I was more moved when I told him what happened and how that I was just about not here. Because it lifted my dog off the ground next to me, and I caught him. I thought I was gone. And I've never been so scared in my life. And I can tell you that I'm not the only one. I lived right on the little bit in circle. And he was very moved by that. And he knew, I think, that he was thinking about possibly leaving. I know that for a fact. And he decided after that, he started the Nick's Kids Foundation, and he's built the Saban Center across the street. He's done so much.
Evangel, if I could stop you, let me go back to something. When you
sure.
said you think Coach was thinking about leaving, you mean leaving Alabama?
Yes. There was a chance, there was a rumor that he was thinking about leaving Alabama, and he was, you know, not sure if he was, you know, done all he was going to do. But I think it made a big difference to him. It moved him that he thought he was needed there, and he was needed in the community as well as the university. And I don't know for a fact that he was going to leave, but it was rumored around us that he was going thinking about it. And I can say that now I'm retired, so he can't come after me. But I don't think he was really serious about leaving, but I know then he decided no, because it affected his son and daughter too, because they were affected by it. I mean, so it was, all of us were, you know, it was a lot of people. There was a big apartment house behind where I lived that killed at least 10 people.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky to still be here. And what he said is very true. That tornado was awful. And Coach was, he's got a heart of gold. If people don't know that, he does. And all the coaches that I've been around all this time have been very good. Even Jeremy Pruitt, he just didn't have much of a personality. But and I get tired of them talking about Kirby Smart because I never saw anybody work much harder than Coach Saban. And he almost did work as hard as Coach Saban. And I think he will do well one day. And I think the other thing I was going to say, and I'll get off the phone because I know you have a lot of callers, but you talk people talking about the first caller you had today was talking about how Georgia's never going to do anything. And, I compare it to Alabama and Notre Dame. When Notre Dame beat us 24-23 that first time, and then they beat us again at least once, maybe twice, I think. And then that day in Legion Field, you could cut the air with a knife. You were probably there, too.
Sure.
I'll imagine. You were probably there as well. I think I was covering it for the TV station at that time. And when I believe it was Cornelius Bennett hit that quarterback.
Yeah, Steve Berline.
Stadium. Yeah, that lit up the stadium. And I think the air kind of raised up, and it just felt like Alabama was not going to lose. I think that's the way Georgia people must feel. I that's the only thing I can think of. And I think they just need to, at some point, in some way, it may not be when Saban's here, but it might be after. I mean, Kirby's going to be fine. He will do a good job there. I don't know anybody works any harder. He would have stayed at Alabama, I really, truly believe, if he hadn't have been a Georgia man. He would have been happy to be here because he was happy here. And he did a good job. And so did Lane Kiffin. You might see Lane back one day himself. He's the guy that you're talking about that you would hate to hand your keys to the car to, that was 16, that
yeah.
You'd be afraid, whatever.
That's right.
He is that kid, but he is a wonderful guy, and he's got a great personality. And so the culture that Coach Saban has built around Alabama is what LSU needs. And it's not been there since Coach McClendon, I don't think. So I've said a lot in a brief period of time. I just wanted to tell you, and I look forward when you get to Tuscaloosa, you find me. I need to apologize to Cecil Hurt because I asked him for your phone number, which is something I shouldn't have done. I should give you my phone number, which I'm going to give to the girl. And if you want to call me, you can, because I wanted a couple of projects I wanted to talk to.
Well, I'll tell you what, I can't wait to get there. And when I do, let's definitely sit around and I'd like to pick your brain for a couple of weeks.
I've got enough of it, I think, left. I can help you with some things, okay?
I look forward to it. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All the best. What a fantastic conversation that was. That was really interesting. Let's check out Jim next. Hello, Jim. Good afternoon to you.
Hi, Paul. Tough to follow that story. My reflection real quick here on the tornadoes. We were living in Eastern Washington at the time, and I'd been in contact with people down here in Alabama for about 3 or 4 months trying to get transferred down here for my job, and really got to know some people really close. And when the tornadoes hit that morning, we were sitting on the couch, my wife and I, and we were watching it live, and we just had tears in our eyes. It was unbelievable what we were seeing. And the next day, I penned a letter and sent it down here to the place I was trying to get transferred to, letting people of Alabama know that people way up there in the Northwest care about them, we're thinking about them, we're praying for them, we were heartbroken for them. And about 4 days later, I got a phone call from my boss up there saying, hey, Jim, you got that job in Alabama. And I go, what job? There was no job opening. That's why we were still in talks about this. And you know what, Paul? I called you within the first week that I moved to Alabama, and it's probably one of the best things that's ever happened in my life.
Well, Jim, that is an amazing story. Thank you for sharing it. Wow, that's really cool.
Thank you, Paul.
Be well. Thanks for the call. Some really fantastic calls so far. We're heading to a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Mel Kiper, bottom of the hour. Mac Jones, next hour. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we welcome you back. Let's get back to the calls. And Billy in Philly is up next. How are you, Billy?
Hi, fine, thank you. I'm calling about Madoff, the subject you brought up a couple of days ago. I think I could help explain what happened.
This please.
Stuff you see on TV doesn't really reflect but the way I remember it. First of all, the amazing thing about Madoff was how little he took out of it. He was supposed to have taken $20 million at one point. But the fact is that if he had $20 billion, that's not a lot of money. And I don't think he had $20 billion. I don't think $200 million is accurate either. The second thing is that people lost very little money if they stayed in the partnership. And the reason they did is because the government threw a lot of legal muscle into recollecting the money that people had taken out. I don't think that the value of Madoff's funds ever got below 60 cents. So if somebody says they lost 90% of the money, it's not possible. The only way you lost a lot of money is if you wanted it right now. In other words, if somebody explodes and you say, all my money's with this person, then you're going to have to settle for less than if you're willing to sit tight and wait till all the legal action takes place and the money is brought back. And the money that brought back was close to, I think it was over.
So Billy, explain this to me. What exactly was the Ponzi scheme?
Well, he took money and he made up reports. He didn't do business. He did nothing. He took in the money. He told people how they had great returns. He sent out reports, but he did nothing. That's a Ponzi scheme. You're taking in money. You're paying out money that you didn't earn. You didn't do anything with it. Money just sat there. Does that explain it?
Yeah, it does. But it sounds so complicated. You and it could be one reason why you were so successful. You chiseled it down to bare bones.
Well, let me explain a meeting that actually took place in one of the major firms on Wall Street. The day this broke, all these firms have short meetings in the middle or early in the morning, and we decide what's our objective today. What do we want to buy? What do we want to sell? This meeting began with a guy running a meeting saying, "Okay, who is exposed to Madoff?" So he asked the equity department, the options department, the credit swap department, the bond department. He asked everybody. Nobody had anything to say. So he knew immediately, this guy wasn't doing any trading. You can't trade and not trade with us. I mean, if this is First Boston, or this is Goldman, or this is Morgan, or Deutsche Bank, you've got to deal with them. So he never did anything. He just took the money in. Now, the amazing thing is that in the journal today, it said he took $17 million.
Right.
That's very small. If he had $14 billion, which is what the journal's top number is, that's not a lot of money. He really didn't take that much.
Let me ask you this, though. The characterization, why has it been characterized the way it has for so long?
Because I don't want to question other people's motives. You're asking me why Hollywood does what they do. It sounds evil and sinister. He may have gotten the wrong people. I'll tell you something else about the investors. They were not smart. For example, the Wilpons, who own the Mets, they
yes.
made their money in real estate, and they were a lot of them were involved in Madoff, and they got hurt. Well, nobody who knew anybody at Goldman Sachs was invested with Bernie Madoff. Nobody. Smart money knew this guy was running some kind of a scheme, and so they didn't invest with him. At the time that the news hit, if you wanted your money, because that was all you had, you probably got 60 cents on the dollar. If you said, no, I'm going to wait, you probably got 90 cents on the dollar. So it was the damage done was much less than we imagined. And frankly, it was not such a big deal. I don't know why. I mean, maybe because the people that got hurt were close to the press. They weren't close to Goldman Sachs, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I'm not surprised by any of this, but it is, when you, first of all, you got the feds, you got 60 Minutes,
yeah.
you've got all these entities who are trying to turn this into the end of the world. I can understand it. I've seen it happen in the media.
Yeah. They didn't lose that much money. I mean, I was invested in a partnership that in part bought their claims. It was when the whistle blows, they stop everything. And one group says, I want my money now. One group says, I'll sit out for 4 or 5 years. I don't care. Just work it out for me. The first group doesn't get very much money. But the people that say, I'm going to wait it out, they have a legal tradable contract.
Right.
And those contracts traded. People bought them and sold them. You could tell every day what your claim was worth. And it may have started because, we never know when this thing's going to be over, around 75, 80 cents. But as it came near the end, they were trading in the 90s.
That's fascinating.
So it was a constantly trading security, these claims. So people lost less money than I thought, and he didn't take very much. $17 million isn't a lot.
But, Billy, let me turn it around. Whether he made much money or not, he still committed massive fraud, did he not?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But
don't want to miss. I don't want to bury the lead here with the body.
No, I don't want to say that he was a nice guy. All I want to say was that look, most intelligent people, that if you have enough money to go put it in private partnerships, then you should be sophisticated enough to figure out what you're doing. And I think like the Wilpon group just kind of piled in because it was cool. And he was very good. He was a slick salesman. I don't mean he was a good person at all.
No, I'm not suggesting that. No, I mean
the damage done was far less than people want you to believe. And the strange thing to me is he didn't really steal much. He could have stolen hundreds. Why didn't he? If he stole hundreds, you'd never be paying people off at 92 cents on the dollar.
Hey, he's a crook with a conscience. What can I tell you?
No, he just wasn't very imaginative.
I mean, I agree. If you're going to rip people off, go for broke. Don't steal their wallets, steal their yachts.
Yeah, do something big. But his house in the Hamptons, isn't that impressive a house?
Yeah.
It's a nice house. It's not in. It's
easy,
not in
easy for you to say.
It's just away from the Hamptons. What?
Hey, that's funny. Hey, appreciate it. Billy, it's always good to I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Yeah. Thank you. Love the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, his Hampton, for those who don't follow New York real estate, what Billy said, and I understand it, but it's, his Hampton, his house in the Hamptons, it wasn't very much. I mean, you've got to be pretty wealthy to have a house in the Hamptons. So that's the end of that conversation. Let's talk to Philip in Alabama. Hello, Philip.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
What I wanted to call you about, we know that the new offensive coordinator is known for being pretty much a balanced type guy. What kind of running game do you foresee Alabama having this year?
Very good. And by the way, Philip, I've heard people inside – raving about Bill O'Brien, and he's a new offensive coordinator. You know, he was a Texans head coach. He was at Penn State, but primarily he's a Belichick guy. But I don't want to overshoot the runway here, but I believe Alabama is loaded at that position. You may not know the names as well, but you know, he will mix it up. And you know, I think much of this depends on Bryce Young.
All right, Paul, thank you very much, and y'all have a great day.
But Philip, I will tell you one other thing. If some of the, you know, Tuscaloosa is known for stories this time of the year. Everyone is optimistic. But some of the early intel on the defense may make you worry less about the offense than previously. We will take a break. Mel Kiper Jr. right around the corner, and more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We are 2 weeks from the draft, and speaking of that, QB21 with Kirk begins Saturday. We talked to Kirk about that last night. Some of you were just listening to his comments. Speaking of the draft, 2 weeks from now, the man that will be the calmest in the building will be Mel Kiper Jr., who joins us now. Mel, thanks so much. Great to have you back. Your mocks continue to fly out, and the questions continue to be raised. is this the last one, or do you still have to do more?
That's great to be with you, Paul. This is 4.0 was completed first and second round, and mock 5.0 goes out the morning of the draft. Todd and I both have our final mocks that morning, and that's it, Paul. And then let it all begin. Let the Cleveland, Ohio, and out there, you know, finally back on the road again, which is great. And let's see what happens. We talked about it. We speculated about it enough. I think it's the most mysterious draft I've covered in 43 years. And there's opinions, Paul, all over the place on a lot of players.
Well, let's talk about why it is such a mystery, Mel. What's the deal?
Well, the lack of a combine, that's number one. Pro days are different than combine. You cannot equate pro days to past combines and what the numbers were. So there's no comparing and contrasting numbers from combines this year. That's out. The COVID situation with the interruptions and guys, some guys impacted more than others. The opt-outs, Paul, you could have no contact at all during the course of the season with any of the opt-outs. That's made it a very difficult evaluation for a lot of teams to try to figure out how you put a board together. It's not easy. And how you value these picks as opposed to, say, next year's draft picks and the following years when trades could be made for future picks, because teams don't really feel comfortable making choices with some of these guys that they have very little information about.
It seems like it's settled in for the top three. I mean, I say that, and we've all seen things explode in and around the draft, but you're at the front end of this, at the vanguard of it all. Do you think anything really is going to change between now and 2 weeks from now?
You would think not, Paul, because you would hope they're locked into who they're selecting. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence is going one, and we know Zach Wilson is a guarantee to go two. Third pick, you thought Mac Jones looked pretty strong. I still think it's 70% that it'll be Mac, but you never know. They were at the Justin Fields second pro day. Trey Lance has his second pro day coming up. So you think about where teams are. I would think the 49ers know who their quarterback is going to be. You would believe it's going to be Mac Jones. And then, obviously, after that, does Atlanta take a quarterback like Trey Lance or Justin Fields? Do they trade out of there and then get the quarterback? Does New England move up to get a quarterback? Does Denver take a quarterback at 9 or move up to get one? Does Chicago or Washington try to move up to get one? It's going to be great intrigue, Paul, after the first three picks to see what happens with the remaining two quarterbacks.
Mac Jones will join us in 30 minutes here, Mel. And I know this is a often asked question, but, yeah, everyone takes a different journey to where they end up. But, you know, what was the key to assuming he ends up that high, to him getting that high?
First of all, congratulate him for me when you talk to him. I think it was great to see what he became from where it was last year up until those final four games. And to see him come out this year, establish himself as an elite quarterback. And then I think the key, Paul, the key to him becoming the third pick, if in fact he goes to the 49ers, is the way he played after he lost Jaylen Waddle, and then after they lost Landon Dickerson, the center. And we say, well, they're plug and play. No, these are two elite players that were taken away. He did not have Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs. They were in the NFL. And all of a sudden, nothing happened. Nothing. There was no drop-off of Mac Jones. There was no drop-off of Devontae either. And that's, I think, what helped both of those guys, particularly Mac. And people say, oh, yeah, all this great talent around him. Well, he helped that talent. He helped Alex Leatherwood at left tackle because he got the ball out so quick and he recognized that some coverage is so quick. Then he goes to the Senior Bowl, and I talk about nailing the draft process. Great regular season, great Senior Bowl week, pro day. Everything about him screams nailing the draft process. And he's so intelligent. He's so competitive. He's so accurate. Put those three together, Paul, and the way he maneuvers in the pocket, and you got yourself maybe a 49er quarterback.
You know, I can't even remember the first time I spoke to you when doing a radio show in Alabama, but it was a long, long time ago. And I'm just curious, as you started doing this early on, and I know it's always easy to say, oh, yeah, sure, I saw it coming. But I mean, if you could go back in time to the first couple of drafts and just compare and contrast for young people who now live the draft almost the entire year, what was it like back then?
Paul, I was told, why are you doing this, number one? Why are you wasting your time doing this? Nobody cares about this. Nobody cares about any of the stuff you're talking about. Go get a real job. And I was told that from 1978 when I started, Paul, all the way up through the 80s, into the 90s. And I think it changed with the internet. I really do. I think now all of a sudden people, fans, started to say, hey, we really care. I don't care what the different media people who are negative and some of the columnists very negative about the draft because that's what they were doing. But when the fans started to have a voice with the internet and they had their blogs and they had their sites and they had their comments and they had the things they could react to with Twitter and all the different things, all of a sudden fans now have big boards, fans have mock drafts, and they became engaged. And I think everybody saw the NFL, who was really against the draft in the beginning, didn't even want to televise by ESPN. They jumped on board very late in the process as well to say, oh, we're gung-ho now, because the fans spoke. And until the fans had the voice and were able to speak, Paul, everybody was negative about the draft. So it's great to see what's happening. I love that everybody is engaged. I love that everybody has an opinion that everybody should respect, because if you have an opinion, everybody should respect it. And it's great. So to see this, if people ask me, how do I feel after 43 years of being in this business, it's very rewarding to see something you believed in back in 1978, now everybody feels like is tremendously entertaining and something they really look forward to.
When you first started doing it, I mean, what was it? There wasn't television. What happened? I mean, what was this thing about?
It was basically, Paul, for me, just trying to do as many radio shows as I could. I tried to put the reports out there, promote them the best I could. I really, in the early years, get the big satellite dish, go out and try to get the information any way you could. I was calling schools regularly to get basic statistical. Nobody can understand that, Paul. I spent 10 to 20 hours a week on the phone just calling schools to figure out to ask how many sacks did a certain player have, how many receptions, what was the average, getting basic statistical information there was no way to get except to call the schools. So I had to spend, like I say, a lot of hours every week, time and energy on the phone, which, you know what it did? It allowed me to gain great relationships, great friendships with a lot of the sports information directors, the football contacts, and because you had a call, and a lot of coaches, I would call them directly, they would call me back. It was getting to know people via the phone and conversations, not texting, but actually talking to people, Paul. And that was the way, like I said, over the years, I've had friends of mine for, like I say, 40-plus years because of that.
Mel, in terms of what it's done to you, you mentioned the being lampooned back then. You've been parodied on almost every format, maybe even including Saturday Night Live. If not, it's they're certainly missing a great opportunity. How is that? I feel like I know you well enough to think that you seem unfazed by it all.
It is, Paul. Paul, because, you know, it's a business where every year you're always looking to head to the next prospect and the next year, and you just do what you do. And I've never, it was no big deal. You just did what you always did. You dealt with all the criticism and all the negativity, and you just, and I'll tell you what, I did have a lot of people in the league. Ernie, of course, he was a great supporter of mine throughout all this. Without Ernie, I wouldn't be where I am today. Jack Faulkner, late great Jack Faulkner, was a great supporter. Bill Walsh, late great Bill, was a great supporter of mine that really were encouraging. And the George Young, late great George Young, Calvert Hall grad like I was here, great supporter. Used to write handwritten notes and write about different comments about the report, how I could improve it. So there were the NFL for me, Paul, as a young kid starting out at age 18, 19, 20, I started ESPN when I was 22, was tremendously supportive and encouraging. And I can't thank all those individuals enough for what they meant to a kid who needed that at the time and got it.
An amazing story, and it's a story worth telling in far more detail than we just covered it. Mel, it's always great to have you on. It's been a long journey. Continue for many, many more years, and thank you for making time for us.
Well, Paul, you're the best. You started what you did, and you became a household name, and you did a great job. And I tell you, you deserve a ton of credit because you are an incredible man and an incredible source for everybody to listen to every day.
Thank you, Mel. All the best, and
thanks,
we look for you.
Take
got
care,
it.
Pal.
Wow. What? I don't know. You bet. Thanks so much. I mean, I'm just marveling, and maybe longevity is getting to me here late in the afternoon. But just think about the way that draft was when he started and where it is. It's a little bit like Lenardi in March Madness, but I think Mel's been out there a lot longer. And, you know, I mean, columnists and talk show hosts would just ridicule this guy. Vicious comments back in the day when there was no Twitter and there was no internet and really nothing but newspapers and radio. We'll take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
And welcome back, and let's continue with more phone calls. George in Los Angeles is up next. Hello, George.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you.
I just wanted to share, you know, we're talking about Bernie Madoff, and I wanted to share a story. I have friends here in Newport Beach. I'm sure you're familiar with that place, or you've probably heard of it.
Oh, I've been there. It's beautiful.
It's a very wealthy area. And it was a married couple, and basically they put their life savings with Bernie, and they lost all of it.
Mm.
They both have to go back to work. Fortunately, they had a house that was newly paid off, and they had to do away with it and move a little bit inland. But they did lost all everything they worked for their whole lives. The main story I was calling on is when Bernie was working in New York, he was living in an apartment in New York.
Yes.
And every morning he used to go to the same coffee shop. And he had the convincing power, right? That's what got him where he was. He was a brilliant man, really. He just used his talents for bad purposes. But if he had done it the right way, he'd probably be in the same, you know, he'd probably be really wealthy right now and out of jail. But he continued going to that coffee shop every day, and he convinced the owner and all of his employees to basically put all their life savings as well and invest with him. And I believe the coffee shop guy had to close down. Everybody lost their jobs. It was just a nightmare. in my opinion, what happened. But it is what it is.
Well, listen, George, I agree. I think it's a shameful tragedy, and it doesn't matter how much money you had, you got swindled, and it was criminal. And he only served, I think, 12 out of the 500 years that he was sentenced to. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. And you take care of yourself. Tom is up next. Tom, thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Tom, we're doing great. Thank you.
I played quarterback in high school, and I played tennis in college. I've been running sports all my life. I've coached sports all my life. My question for you today is, how do you think Alabama's basketball team is going to do next year, and how many of their players do you think will turn pro, and will we keep our coach?
Well, Tom, thank you for the call, and appreciate you sharing your history with us. It's very, very, very respectable past, to say the least. I think Alabama has I think the team next year will be better than the team this year. And it's hard to gauge on who will come out or who won't based on, you just have to see it play out. But as far as Nate Oates, I really do believe he is locked into Alabama for a significantly long period of time. I thought Greg Byrne was very smart to lock him down, just like Hunter Yurecek did this week with Coach Muss out in Arkansas. That's what you do. When you have talented people, you get behind them, you respect them, and you make sure that they don't leave. It's common sense, isn't it? Let's get back to the calls and talk to Rick, who is in Tennessee. Hello, Rick.
Hey,
Rick.
Paul.
Hey
How
there.
You doing?
I am well. Thank you very much.
I hope I don't get cut off here. I got a few things. Number one, about Nick, that is so great. It brought a tear to my eye, actually, hearing about him and the tornado in Tuscaloosa. But that's the head coach of every major school in the SEC throughout the South. They are such a face of that state that everybody looks to him for inspiration. And I was really humbled and touched by that story. Second of all, let's get to the good stuff, football. Justin Fields, he isn't a first-round pick. I know Mel and all these other guys talk about this guy, that guy, Michael Vick, Justin Fields, Ryan Leaf. But over the years, I've learned that if the guys who turn out being actually good quarterbacks in the NFL are guys who can complete passes from the pocket, period. Regardless of all the other. The other can be great, but if they can't complete passes from the pocket, they will not succeed in the NFL. And Justin Fields has not shown that he can do that.
Well, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. We'll find out very soon. Bob is up next in New York. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
We're doing great. Thank you.
All right. Hey, I've seen many baseball games down at Bluebell Park in College Station. What SEC school should I make my a must-see visit to see a game? In your history being in the sports and that, where should I go next to really see a fascinating stadium and their facilities? And as always, Paul, love the show, and go Aggies.
Thank yeah, you. Bob, that's a great question, and I love, and there's no good answer. I have been asked that by people in Washington, New York, around the country, around the world, and I know it's cliche, but I think if you're from New York and you're looking for one place to see a college football game, and you've already been to College Station, I mean, I think Tiger Stadium is the personification of college football. It doesn't mean it's better than Tuscaloosa on a Saturday night or Auburn. I mean, every one of these places is unique. We all know that. But I've covered games all over the country, and that's where I try to gear people toward for a Saturday night. Don't go for an afternoon game. Not the same experience. Go for the A&M LSU game down there at night, or the Alabama LSU game down there at night. it's to me would be top of the line. We'll take a break. Speaking of that, guy who knows a little bit about playing in the SEC, Mac Jones and Landon Dickerson are right around the corner.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.